Chapter 3. As Eline rode up to the little inn in Toros Bend, utterly exhausted, a gorgeous young woman with long red hair in a ponytail and an earring sparkling in her left ear was mounting a roan stallion. The stable hand ogled her as she rode north. Eline was almost on top of the stable hand before the man turned. He blinked at her stupidly.
"Hey, your friend just left," he said,
pointing to the disappearing redhead.
"What are you talking about?"
Eline was so tired she could hardly think. She'd walked for 2 days before one of the horses had found her, and she'd never found out what had happened to the other captives, or the Caladorans, or the Imuri who'd saved her.
"You could still catch her,"
the stable hand said. Eline had seen the young woman well enough to know that they'd never met. She shook her head. She had to pick up supplies in Toros Bend before she headed to Cenaria. Besides, it was almost dark, and after her days on the trail with her Caladoran captors, Eline needed a night in bed and desperately needed a chance to wash up.
"I don't think so,"
she said. She went inside, rented a room from the distracted innkeeper's wife with some of the generous amount of silver she'd found in her horse's saddlebags, washed herself and her filthy clothing, and immediately fell asleep. Before dawn, she pulled on her still damp dress distastefully and went downstairs. The innkeeper, a slight young man, was carrying in a crate full of washed flagons from outside and setting them upside down to dry before he finally went to bed for the night. He nodded at Eline in a friendly manner, barely glancing up.
"The wife will have breakfast ready in half an hour, and if..." "Oh, hell."
He looked at her again, obviously seeing her for the first time.
"Myra didn't tell me."
He rubbed his hands on his apron in what was obviously a habitual gesture, because his hands weren't wet, and stalked over to a table piled high with knickknacks, notes, and account books. He pulled out a note and handed it to her apologetically.
"I didn't see you last night, or I'd have given it to you straight away."
Eline's name and description were written on the outside of the note. She unfolded it, and a smaller, crumpled note fell out. The smaller note was in Kylar's hand. It was dated the day he'd left her in Caernarvon. Her throat tightened. "Eline," she read.
"I'm sorry. I tried. I swear I tried.
Some things are worth more than my happiness. Some things only I can do. Sell these to Master Burari and move the family to a better part of town. I will always love you." Kylar still loved her. He loved her. She'd always believed it. But it was different to see it in his own messy writing. The tears flowed freely. She didn't even care about the disconcerted innkeeper opening and shutting his mouth, unsure what to do with a woman crying in his inn. Eline had refused to change, and it had cost her everything. But the god was giving her a second chance. She'd show Kylar just how strong, deep and wide a woman's love could be. It wasn't going to be easy, but he was the man she loved. He was the one. She loved him. And it was as simple as that. It was several minutes before she read the other note. This one, written in an unfamiliar woman's hand.
"My name's Vi," the note said. "I'm the wet boy who killed Jarl and kidnapped Uli. Kylar left you to save Logan and kill the God King. The man you love saved Cenaria. I hope you're proud of him. If you go to Cenaria, I've given Mama Kay access to my accounts for you. Take whatever you want. Otherwise, Uli will be at the Chantry, as will I. And I think Kylar will go there soon. There's more. But I can't bear to write it. I had to do something terrible so we could win. No words can erase what I've done to you. I'm so terribly sorry. I wish that I could make it right. But I can't. When you come, you can exact whatever vengeance you wish. Even to my life. Vi Suvari. The hairs on the back of Eileen's neck were standing up. What kind of a person would claim to be such an enemy and such a friend? Where were Eileen's wedding earrings? There's more. What did that mean? Vi had done something terrible? The lead weight of intuition dropped into Eileen's stomach. That woman outside yesterday had been wearing an earring. It probably wasn't. It surely wasn't. Oh, my God! Eileen said. She ran for her horse. The dream was different every night. Logan stood on the platform, looking at pretty, petty Tara Grayson. She would walk over an army of corpses, or marry a man she despised, to seize her ambition. As it had that day, Logan's heart failed him. His father had married a woman who poisoned all his happiness. Logan could not. As he had that day, Logan asked for her fealty, the round platform reminding him of the hole where he'd rotted during the Caladoran occupation. Tara refused. But instead of submitting himself so the armies wouldn't be split on the eve of battle, in this dream, Logan said, "Then I sentence you to death for treason." His words sang. Tara stumbled back too slowly. The blade cut halfway through her neck. Logan caught her, and abruptly, it was another woman. Another place. Janine's slashed throat gushed blood over her white nightgown and his bare chest. The Caladorans who'd broken into their wedding chamber laughed. Logan thrashed and woke. He lay in darkness. It took him time to reorient himself. His Janine was dead. Tara Grayson was queen. Logan had sworn fealty. Logan Gyre had given his troth, a word that meant not just his oath, but his truth. So if his queen ordered him to stamp out the last few Caladorans, he complied. He would always be glad to kill Caladorans. Sitting up in the dark of the camp tent, Logan saw the captain of his bodyguards, Caldrosa Wynne. During the occupation, Mama Kay's brothels had become the safest places in the city for women. Mama Kay had accepted only the most beautiful and exotic. They had drawn the first Caladoran blood of the war during a city-wide ambush that had come to be called the Nocta Himata, the Night of Blood. Logan had honored them publicly, and they had become his. Those who could fight had fought and died and saved him. After the Battle of Pavil's Grove, Logan had dismissed the rest of the Order of the Garter except for Caldrosa Wynne. Her husband was one of the 10 witch hunters, and they'd go nowhere without each other. So she'd said she might as well serve. Caldrosa wore her garter on her left arm, Sewn from enchanted Caladoran battle flags, it glimmered even in the darkness. She was, of course, pretty, with olive sethy skin, a throaty laugh, and 100 stories, some of which she claimed were even true. Her chain mail was ill-fitting, and she wore a tabard with his white gerfalcon, its wingtips breaking a black circle.
"It's time," she said.
General Aegon Brandt poked his head in the tent, then entered. He still needed 2 canes to walk.
"The scouts have returned. Our elite Caladorans think they're setting an ambush. If we come from the north, south, or west, we have to go through dense forest. The only way is through the Hunter's Wood. If it really exists, it'll wipe us out. If I were facing 1,400 men with only 100, I don't think I could do any better."
If the situation had arisen a month ago, Logan wouldn't have hesitated. He would lead his army through the open spaces of the Hunter's Wood, legends be damned. But at Pavel's Grove, they'd seen a legend walk and devour thousands. The Ferali had shaken Logan's conviction that he knew the difference between superstition and reality.
"They're Caladoran.
Why don't they head north for Quarig's Pass?" Aegon shrugged. It was a week-old problem. This platoon wasn't nearly as sloppy as the Caladorans they knew. Even as they fled from Logan's army, they'd raided. Cenaria had lost 100 men. The Caladorans hadn't lost 1. The best guess Aegon could make was that they were an elite unit from some Caladoran tribe the Cenarians hadn't encountered before. Logan felt like he was staring at a puzzle. If he didn't solve it, his people would die.
"You still want to hit them from all sides?" Aegon asked.
The problem stared at Logan, mocking him. The answer didn't come.
"Yes." "Are you still insisting on leading the cavalry through the wood yourself?"
Logan nodded. If he was going to ask men to brave death from some monster, he would do it himself, too.
"That's very brave,"
Aegon said. He'd served nobles long enough to make a compliment speak volumes of insult.
"Enough,"
Logan said, accepting his helmet from Caldrosa.
"Let's go kill some Caladorans.